Blog Talk Radio.
It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh. And I'm feeling good. A new day, it's a new life. feeling good. Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean. Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world and a bold world for me. Stars, when you shine, you know how I feel. Send out the pine, you know how I feel.
Once again, you know how I feel, Life and Leadership Network with the Reverend Morale P. Brown, a.k.a. Coach Brown, and we have Coach Sharon Mullings-Nielsen as well coming on today. We're going to talk about a lot of great stuff. You know, great, great History Woman Month and two great female singers, performers that really have innovative ideas about life, living, and changing things, Jill Scott, and the great, great one and only, my girl that I love her so, Nina Simone. Now we're going to bring on a girl, another girl that I love so, that's changing the world with understanding, motivation, and leadership, and just understanding yourself and have life go on. The one and the only Coach Morale. Let's give her a nice hand.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ron. What a great introduction. Wow, wow. It's been a great week and
I know,
great
I know
month.
You're too young to remember the great Nina Simone.
Yes, I am a little young, but, you know, I like history. Oh, my God. You know, just acknowledging without a doubt the contributions of females, the women, and especially the Nubian, you know, the Dawson women who were able to become trailblazers, you know, and so I'm excited just to acknowledge and to celebrate, you know, a few of the women and just to talk about tonight in terms of, and I just want this really to be a conversation and a dialogue, and I'm excited for later on my special guest, as you said, Ms. Sharon Mullings-Nielsen. She's backed by popular demand, and she's a director from Woodland Academy in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I'm going to start talking about the female, the history of the female, the types of females, and the personalities, and some of the barriers that prevents us from being, from loving ourselves, but also being what we were meant to be. Sharon will be talking
right.
about a woman's worth and empowering women to love themselves. Yes, Dr. Ron.
Right. Yeah, you know what? Two great female artists that come on,
yes.
Jill Scott, who has been influenced by Nina Simone.
Yes.
Nina Simone have influenced over the ages. When you get to really know Nina Simone and what her thought pattern was. See, one thing,
yes.
Like today's society and music is about, hey, what? Let's go play. You know, it's about rhythm. It's about a good poetic lyrics. You know, y'all remember that song? You down with OPP, yeah, you know me. You down with OPP, yeah, you know. That's all they said.
Right.
But it was rhythmatic. Everybody was dancing. Everybody loved it, you know, and the brothers made, you know, tons of money.
Yes.
But it had no, I mean, you know, that's all it said, you know. But you,
all the
you talk about, right, dig it. When you talk about Anita Simone, who talks about, you know, that
right.
song just played, you know, she's saying, you know, all the things that I've been through. You know, when she breaks
right,
it down when
right.
at these interviews when she was on Johnny Carson and all these different right. shows, and they were talking to her. Because Nina Simone had a way about her. I loved it. Her,
right.
my father was a jazz singer, and I got to meet a lot of her in person and got to know her
awesome,
as a person.
Awesome.
She was mm-hmm. a very empathetic person towards people.
Right.
And
yes,
she saw the flight
important.
Of a black woman. Very concerned.
Mm-hmm.
She was such a
right.
civil rights leader for the black women. She was telling
yes.
sisters, you know, it's time for you to get up, get out, and make a change in the society.
Right.
And she was letting them know mm-hmm. that, you know, you have you have nature inside of you. You're bringing
right.
forth societies, you know.
Exactly.
You think about children having
exactly.
babies and things of this sort. And the nourishing, you know, women
right.
are great nurturers. They
oh,
are
yes.
the ones that influence the children, I would say, more than
yes.
the fathers. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
fathers
yeah.
are important
oh, yeah.
as well and important for the good
mm-hmm.
unit. But God created us together as a family
yes.
unit, you know, because
right.
everybody has a, you know, like I just tell my children, all of us got a part to play, you know, we in this
yes,
family,
absolutely.
In this household.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? And, you know, as time went on, the family structure changed.
Oh yeah.
You don't have the discipline you had when I was growing up. It, you know, there's a lot of restraints now. You know,
right.
I even, you know, I faced it with my younger children where, you know,
okay.
I have discipline and you know, and family services, whoever they thought it was, thought that I was being
right.
abusive. But you know, when it comes mm-hmm. to the final analysis, you know, it was found out that wasn't the case. But
see?
And then I saw, you know, and what Nina Simone talked about, and Jill Scott came in the scene in 2007, and she's like, sisters,
uh-huh.
you know, it's something
yes.
going on in the environment in terms of relationships.
Oh, yes.
You know, because
right.
back in 2007, I don't know if you noticed that sisters were saying, you know what, I got mines. I got this. I got
right,
money.
Right,
I got success,
right, right, exactly.
I don't need a man. I don't need a man to do nothing for me. You know,
okay.
it was almost like, you know,
yeah.
all I need him for, know, whatever, but, you
their
know,
liberation.
And so women start saying, you know what, if you notice about that time, more women were adopting kids and living single, and more women
yeah,
were having
true,
children
true.
With men
right.
who were not their husbands, and they was bringing
yes.
those kids up without him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it came
right.
to a,
wow.
the woman, the especially I'm talking about African-American women, talking about black women.
Yes.
It got
uh-huh.
to the point where women felt like, you know what, I will do better by myself.
Okay.
Because
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
what they didn't see the paradigm of the shift. If
mm-hmm.
you notice as time went on from Reconstruction,
right.
late 1800s to the early 1900s, men
mm-hmm.
were out there working and providing.
Yes, absolutely.
Men were getting degrees and getting educated, doing different things. Women were performing at a larger number, the mothering, being at home, being with the children. And then if you
yes.
notice, and you as a woman, you let me know, I think
mm-hmm.
somewhere around the 1970s, it became nonchalant to be a homemaker. Women felt
right,
that
right,
more,
yes,
it was more
yes.
stifling their growth. Women wanted
mm-hmm.
to get out, get working,
right.
get involved. And sister, let me tell you something. Y'all are just great. Y'all are just great. Y'all can do everything. Men are like, okay, I can do this. And this time,
right.
because we know we're practical thinkers. You know?
Right, right. And John,
men are very practical, you know.
Yes.
But sisters are like, oh, well, I can do whatever it is, you know, girl. Come on now. And you'll have something that you'll have, you know, and I was always telling Cass this was from the time I was paid about 21, 22 years old, I observed. And I was telling brother, I said, you know, brothers, we don't have that unity that women have. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
A woman
yes,
walking
yes.
down the street with her man. On a nice
mm-hmm.
sunny day in the park, and they could
right.
be lovey-dovey and, all, and everything, and eating ice cream, whatever.
Yes.
And she'll see another sister
mm-hmm.
sitting down on a bench crying, and she's like,
right.
"Girl, what's going on? What's going on with
see?
You, girl? What's that?" Don't even know her from the hole in the wall. You dig what I'm saying? But her compassion drives her to find out what's going on with that sister. Now, brother could be walking the same scenario. Brother sitting
right.
there crying. I'm like, you know what, hon? Let's step over this way because we don't know what to do. Okay. We're going to do. You know what I'm saying?
Different reaction.
Right. It's the male culture. But so many black women in the history of our nation, the history of just all over the world, you know, you watch women in Africa. Baskets on their head, baby in the front of their chest. They're bringing the food to the house.
See?
You know, they're washing the clothes. They're sweeping up the yard or whatever you want to call it. You know what I'm saying? They're tidying up what looked like a hut sometimes. And, you know, and as time goes on, if you look back even during the Neanderthal man, caveman, women was there doing it, keeping it together, you know.
Right.
Eve is the only one that got tired and figured she's going to lie a little bit, but we ain't going to talk about that.
Right.
You know what he did, Adam? We ain't going to talk about what he did, Adam. We're going to go ahead and we're going to talk about that sister.
Right.
I'm going to leave that alone.
I'm going to get ready to jump in a moment, you know?
I just want to say that I know just from personal experience, from academic experience, from studying, you know, civilization, the creation. And just in my profession of studying psychology, we study sociology, we study geology.
Absolutely.
We have to understand, you know, understand how societies are formed and why certain people do certain things, which was always an interest of mine as a child. That's why I went into, I just wanted to study psychology. Not that I want to get so involved in it, end up getting involved in it because my mother like,
You're going to understand human behavior.
I was always interested in that. But my mom like, you know what? You got this degree now, baby. Go get you a job and take care of them children you got, you know. So I went and got a job in the field. I went and got a job in the field. I got a little discontent with the field because when I got into the field of psychology, actually administering and counseling and reviewing. Now, psychologists, we do not prescribe meds. But we can make a referral to a psychiatrist
who then
can go further and research the person's concerns and do more clinical. You talk about when you hear people say clinical psychology, that's more on the medical side. When you hear people are clinical psychologists or clinical psychiatrists. So me as a psychologist, I do the basic evaluation over a period of maybe 3 months, 4 months, 6 months with the person. And then I can decide, well, you know what? Maybe this person is not, if my session with them is not getting me results that I think the person should have progressed to, then I have the option of referring them to someone who maybe might feel that they need some level of medication, some behavior, what they call behavioral modification meds. So my observation in the field, when I got in the field, was a lot of abuse going on. Research, you get a lot of money. What they call teaching hospitals, we do a lot of research. That's what they call themselves, teaching hospitals. And they take in a lot of internships. And with these internships, they open up these research departments. And the research department, what they do, ching, bring more money. So they can say, oh, you know what? All these people over here in the South Bronx, you know, all of them on welfare, all of them have medical, have anxiety attacks. They have high-level psychosis. We need to find out what's going on, and they'll do this research, and the different funding sources will give them billions of dollars or millions of dollars to do the research, and then they would hire these interns and stuff of that nature. So I saw that as a money-making thing. I saw a lot of abuse of poor people and especially people of color. And I've written about it, you know, and I've been rejected a lot by my profession, and I've been told that I'm making up things and I'm causing trouble and, you know, stay in my lane and all that stuff, you know. So I got to the point where I just couldn't continue at all, and to compensate me, they made to check me up, they made me a hospital administrator, and I was no longer in that part of the profession. But I say that to say this. My looking at things from that perspective on a professional level, what was going on in the communities, I saw the abuse based on alcoholism in the community, drugs, addiction in the community, a lot of poverty, a lot of welfare recipients. And back in the 70s, there was a situation, and I'm not saying they made it look like everybody was like that, but You will find a young female who might have a child like 16 and go on public assistance. Her mother also, when you trace it back, her mother did the same thing. Her mother's mother did the same thing. And people say this was a lifetime experience in that family. Mm-hmm. And you know how how we say in the church, be the one, be the person to cut off the sin in your family. Be that person you know, change the family structure, because people felt, especially in the church back in those days, they felt like certain families had these generational curses. You know, I don't personally know that to be a fact. I don't, you know, I don't see that. I don't see God being like that. Like, oh yeah, I'm just going to curse this family. You know, I don't we don't got that kind of thought. We don't serve that kind of master. But I'm just saying for women, the things that I saw in the community, the disparities, the poverty, medical and health challenges, the economic challenges, the academic challenges, because everything worked in a circle. Bad health care, bad schooling, bad police, bad living environment, public public housing, bad living environment. You know, though I must say, you know, good times is real. You know, good times in the family living project. You know, back in the day, I'm sure you probably saw that little because they played so many times. Because it was, I don't know if you remember, probably about 10 or 15 years ago, it was a discussion whether the Huxtables were more real for the black family.
Whether
good times were more real for the black family.
Right.
And I say, you know what? Nobody knows. It's not. I really hated one thing. I hated when I was growing up, because I was, you know, I don't really talk about this a lot, but it's real. I was considered a privileged child. I was even I tell people, you know, I picked cotton, but I picked cotton for my family. You know, my grandfather was well off. He was a farmer. He only had a third grade education. By the time I came around, he was very successful. My mother's father, my father's father was manufacturing clothes. He was all over this country. He was very successful and wealthy. And I grew up, but in the South, it's not the same kind of picture that you would think of wealth. Like, we didn't run around in limousines and had chauffeurs and maids and all that stuff. We did everything ourselves.
Right,
you know,
but
as far as money and status concern, I grew up around that, but that was not always the story. You know what I'm saying? In our family, our history is we're sharecroppers. Sharecropping people is a 10 cent up from being a slave. Okay, it's just the next level from being a slave. You're still being confined to the same kind of conformities of the dysfunctionalities of a misguided society like slavery, as well as, you know, being sharecropper's son. So I've seen it all. I've seen, you know, all the horror stories that y'all see. So so in that capacity, you don't really feel, you know, you might be wealthy, but you don't feel it because you don't have the beautiful, and I always tell people, that's when I learned. Because I always thought as a kid, I always thought that when I was 10 years old, I always thought that if I can just become rich, if I can just become educated, if, you know,
if
because I grew up with Father Nobess and Leave It to Beaver and, you know, Andy Griffin and all these shows with these white people and they were just good lives. And I had that life. You know, I had that life and more. I lived better than some of the white kids in South Carolina, but I just didn't feel it, you know, and that's what I'm trying to tell people. Even though your financial situation can change, your academic situation can change, social conditioning is a whole nother ball game. You know what I'm saying? The sisters.
And Dr. Ron, if I may interject, you know, just on that social status, rather it's the good times, or, you know, if you grew up like the Huxtables, it's basically this. Every, you know, according to Maslow, right, getting back to psychology, you know, every human being wants to know that they're physically safe, know that they're emotionally safe, you know, They want to feel good about themselves. You know, and it's called self-actualization. And so regardless of what spectrum are you on, you know, everyone wants to have the clean air, the water, the shelter, stability, security and family, the environment, safe environment, you know. And so when I was thinking about going back to when you were talking about, you know, earlier, Nina Simone, you know, I think of, and we had this conversation earlier, you know, Marian Anderson. These are females who, in spite of what the conditions were, you know, in the early 1900s, in the mid, you know, 1900s, they were determined that if their giftings were singing, that they were going to sing, you know, and that they were not going to, in a sense, sell out to mainstream society, you know, as you were saying, when it came down to, I think of, you know, Sister Act, I think it was one or two, and you had, and I can't think of this girl, you can maybe help me with her name, Lauryn Hill, you know, she played this role where her mother was forbidding her to sing because her mother, you know, say, hey, you know, it's not a good field to go into, you're not going to make any money, you know, and she disobeyed her mom. And so when I think of following your passion and following your dream, and I call it the tag, you know, the talents, the abilities, and the gifting, it's for us to say, you know what, regardless of where this talent is going to lead us, we need to sing. You know, there was a play called Mama, I Want to Sing some years ago in New York. And the girl was like, Mama, I want to sing, you know. And so I think of that no matter where a person is in history, that they want to follow what God has given them to do. And everyone, you know, is looking to be what we call self-actualized, you know. And those are just terms in psychology where you want to make sure that you can express the highest form of yourself, you know, not the lower form, and to be able to maximize by using your talents, your abilities, and your gifting in, rather, it's, I'll say, STEAM, you know, science, technology, engineering, you know, art, you know, I'll say mathematics, and I'll include, you know, in music, you know. And so that you can shine, you know, the song was saying, it's a new day, freedom is mine, you know, it's your time to shine. And so to the audience that's listening tonight, rather you are living in the area or the level of good times, or rather you are living like the Huxtables, know that we are all human beings and we all have the same essential needs, and that it does take, like you said, that sisterhood, you know, to realize that, yes, this is March, you know, we are at the end of the month, but it doesn't mean we have to stop remembering, you know, the contributions of the female, you know, what, you know, I have in my book, The Unending Love of a Father, and I'll just read this page quickly, you know, and trust me, I'm going to read it with enthusiasm. But it says, if you talk about this, Dr. Juan, the traditional roles of the woman has involved, you know, a caring nature and household related work. It has also included positions as they were teachers, accountants, you know, data entry clerks, receptionist, housekeeper, and a nurse, to name a few. But now we've broke the glass ceiling and we've gotten out of the box. And so now the contemporary role of the female, you know, show that we have an indomitable spirit, an unstoppable, an unmovable spirit. And so our roles is broader. For example, May Carolyn Jameson, the engineer. She's also was a physician and NASA astronaut. This is a black female. She was the first African female, you know, astronaut. And then you had Condoleezza Rice, Hillary Clinton. She ran for president of the United States. Madeleine Albright, you know, they held the most senior cabinet position, such as the Secretary of State in the United States. And now, hey, we have Kamala Harris, you know.
There you go.
And so many others that is saying, you know what, no, it's time for us to shine. We will not be stopped. We will not, you know, slow down. But we're going to make sure that, okay, they're looking, the legislature, you know, the Republicans, and maybe even some Democrats, they're looking to slow down the voting rights in Georgia. you know. But we have powerful people, Stacey Abrams, saying, hey, no, this is not going to happen.
Yeah,
you know,
fantastic.
We're going to change the color of these states, you know. And and the young people who are going behind now saying, hey, we're going to follow our counterpart, those who are leaving a legacy politically.
Right.
So, you know what? Let's get out there, you know what I mean, and push the voting rights and look and see if there's unequal, you know, what do you call these things, you know, polling and all of this other stuff, long lines.
Right.
I live in Georgia. They were astronomical long lines, and some of the polling sites, they weren't even working, you know. But we get to a point like, no, as a female, we're going to make sure that we, in a sense, tear up the carpet, get rid of that feeling, and say, let's look closer. Let's take a closer look. And so they took a closer look, and they went to those polling sites, and they saw what was going on, and they saw the oppression, and it was like, no, we're not having it. You know, I call it the crossing guard, you know, determination, where the crossing guard has on the uniform, and it can be a very small, petite, you know, quiet, even an elderly crossing guard, but because she has on usually that blue and white uniform, she just puts her hand up, and she's able to command a 3,000, you know, pound car, you know, a ton, you know, and because of her authority, she's now saying to this car, you can't go any further, and don't even dare to hit me, you know, and within her own self, she's not powerful, but within the authority of, you know, society and of her job, she's been given that authority, and so I believe, as especially as a Nubian sister, you know, a queen, that we are saying, hey, we're not waiting for permission anymore. We're putting our hands up and saying, stop, enough is enough.
There
you
go.
Know, in terms of, I think of in the last, 10 years, you know, the, what do you call it, the Me Too movement, you know, where, yes, for years ago, there were females who, when they went into the mainstream force, you know, that they were treated more as a sex object, or they were hit on, or they were harassed, or they were sexually abused. But they're saying now enough is enough, you know? And
so
for us as a people, we, you know, this COVID-19 has come, in my opinion, to shut the females down and to shut the world down, to say, you know what, we don't want you to say that you're dissatisfied with the economy. You know, we don't want you to say you want your rights and your civil rights and, you know, your political and your financial rights, that we want to shut your mouth, you know, and then tell you, you know, just get in this little box. We'll tell you when to come out. We'll tell you where to shop, you know, and all these different things. So I just believe that we're in a great place historically in terms of where we are to change the trajectory of society. And when I think of the wheel of life,
And you know something too, not to kick your thought, people were happy to see women in leadership in the political system, because always felt secret it was the most masculine, you know, misogynistic man probably, you know, always felt that if a woman became president, things would be a little different, because we know that, we know, you know, whether it's a white woman, a Spanish woman, a black woman, because I watched, you know, when Kamala Harris was being elected, you know, I forgot her name, the woman that was running for president, but she bowed out, and then she was one of the selection people. They had several people being selected for vice president. Remember, and half of them were African American as well. But
I'm looking at her.
Female,
it was Stacey Abrams. Yeah,
right.
Stacey
Abrams and all of them. Right. All of those women was in there, but they all felt comfortable.
Right.
They were asked, well, you know what? If you don't make it, how about they select this one? They're like, oh yeah, she's fine, she's good. You know, they were very comfortable with endorsing the next woman. You know, and I think, you know, America had a situation, not so much with anti-woman. I don't think that Sarah Palin was, I don't think she was the woman equipped for that time. You know, it was more like they were looking for somebody in the realms of a Hillary Clinton, but who just didn't, the time that, you know, Palin came in, Hillary just didn't have that, you know, situation at that time. But I'm just saying, when Sarah Palin came in, her attitude and stuff like that didn't match the kind of woman, I think, that women were looking for as well. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So certain,
no,
certain personality
yeah.
things that she was revealing,
her.
Right, her family
right.
structure, her personality, mm-hmm. and certain things that she was bringing to the table. Even women was like, you know what, hold on, girl. You know, I don't think you're the one, you know. And so women
right.
are very honest about, you know, if you're not qualified, you're not ready, you know, where men might say, you
yeah.
know what, you know, he's not all that and this and the other, we're going to have to put him in there anyway, and we're going to, because he's part of our party. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Even Republican
yes.
women are like, you know, Palin is not the one. She doesn't have the experience.
Yes.
She doesn't have the background. She doesn't have
right.
the initial humanitarian
mm-hmm.
mentality.
Right.
You know, they saw a lot of things about her as a woman. A lot of women saw,
yes.
even, you know, conservative Republican women saw certain
right.
qualities in her that they said, you know what, not this day, honey. This is not your day. You
yes.
know what I'm saying?
Yes. This is not,
whereas
this
men,
not the time.
Men would
right.
say, you know what, that's my homeboy. That's my Republican brother. You know, let me get him in
right.
here. And guess what? Guess what? Guess uh-huh. what? Hiding in the bushes there is Dr.
See?
James W. Winborn himself. And we want to bring
oh,
him
wow.
into the conversation, give him a nice little welcome,
awesome.
And bring him in to Life and Leadership with
Greetings. How's everyone doing tonight?
Finding yourself.
Good.
Welcome.
We have a hot
good,
topic
good.
Tonight. Women or men? Who should be the... I'm just kidding.
No. This show is strictly about promoting the female for Women's History Month. Go ahead, Doctor.
I don't know why Dr. Robinson is trying to get some of the shine. But
you see it, right?
Yeah. I mean, listen, you know, I've been listening to you guys talk a little bit, but the longer we're around, the more revelations come out, the more discoveries we are made aware of, not only women accomplishments, but
yes.
in particularly black and minority women accomplishments.
Absolutely.
That were kept hidden from us for
yes.
very long periods of times in order to maintain this ideal of white supremacy.
Yeah.
Not to give anyone any credit for anything other than a white man. But we
right.
are seeing every day more and more. We talk about Jameson, the astronaut,
yeah.
we just recently learned about the black women that put the numbers together so that they could find out how
See?
To get to where they need
exactly.
to get
exactly, exactly.
Right, and so that history was there. It was on the records,
exactly.
but it wasn't in our history books.
Right, right.
You know, what was in our history books was lies. We learned about Christopher Columbus.
True.
Really? Discovering America. So,
right.
But we see, and we can only be grateful, but then again, no need to be surprised.
Right.
Because the female is the stronger of the two.
Yes, yes.
Sorry, Dr. Watson.
Hey, listen, I'm saying the same thing. I'm with you.
He's saying the same thing. He's with you, definitely.
Okay. You know, I tell people, when we understand the process of metamorphosis and how babies are made, you will understand that all embryos start off female.
Right.
And the male is a metamorphosis, okay? And so it's we call it stronger, but it's a derivative of the female.
Hmm.
And so that's
Correct.
Why there's more females than the male. Because
Correct.
Male is a mistake, kind of. You know what I mean? Well,
I got to do some study of further research.
a necessary tool to keep the world populated, kind of.
Mm.
Because, you know, there are some species that can produce that are only female, but we're not going to get into that tonight on this particular show. but that is the case. So we need not to be surprised. You know, I tell people all the time, when I'm talking to a couple about purchasing property, I have the husband and the wife sitting in front of me. I'm talking to, I'm looking at both of them.
Right.
But I'm talking to her.
Thank you. Thank you.
Because she is the one that is going to get it done.
Right.
I'm talking to both of them. I'm looking at both of them, but I'm talking to her about what papers I need.
Right. True.
Okay.
Oh,
what information I need.
Right.
Who needs to be called. All right.
Wow.
Why? Because she's going to do that. Instinctively, she's going to do that. I think why?
Yes.
Because of the babies. You understand?
Okay. Got you.
Naturally, she knows I got to house these babies.
See?
Okay. Where sometimes the male is, it'll work out. I'm going to fix it. Don't even worry about it. She's like, look. This is what we're going to do. We're going to go get, we're going to find the 2019-2020 tax returns, E-40, whatever it is.
See?
We're going to do what we're going to do what we got to do. I already know this from experience.
Right.
So when I say, you know, give me a call on Thursday, I already know who's calling me.
True.
Who's calling me.
True.
You know what I mean?
Wow.
Now, he going to bring her when they got to come back to the office. He going to drive. He going to sit there. He going to act interested.
Right.
But at,
you talking right, doctor. Pack. You talking right.
I've been doing this a long time. So I know who are the people that make things happen. Listen, it's her nature. I've said it before. It's the nature of a woman. You give her something, she'll multiply it and give it back.
Woo! See?
That's her nature. You understand?
It's true.
You give her a seed, she'll multiply, give it back, give your family.
Right. I like that. Mm-hmm.
You give her a home, you give her a house, she'll multiply it, and she'll give you a home.
Yes.
You give her groceries, she'll multiply it and give you a meal. You understand?
Right.
That's
mm-hmm.
what she does.
Exactly.
Amen.
It's a natural instinct.
Oh yes. Mm. Oh yes. You know. Wow. Mm.
You know it's ironic that you said that, Dr. Wimborne. I was years ago, I was selling cars for General Motors, and they had all these, you know, classes you had to go to develop your marketing and sales skills.
Mm-hmm.
And the class I went to said directly that if you're selling a car and there's a family involved, husband, wife, and children, concentrate on the wife. Give her all the necessary details. When you demo that car, make sure she drives. You walk around that car and show all the good parts and all the safety features and all the nice things.
Right.
Make sure she's looking. You know, they said because in the final analysis, and they tested this. These are psychologists who do industrial and commercial studies. And they said that, they said the woman will make the decision on which car they're going to buy. And, man, you read on the money. Everything you said was in that class that I went to. So I think you wrote it.
Wow. That's powerful. You know, I think of, you know, Adam and Eve and, you know, Adam being created first, and Eve was the helpmate, you know, and I tell people, help me, meaning he's already working. He's already being productive. But Eve was created so that she could enhance, you know. And like you're saying, when it's all said and done, you know, it is the woman's neck who turns the head, you know. And so when you see a great man, know that there's a woman behind him, you know. Unfortunately, even if it's the Mr. Mistress, you know, and being able to, you know, from that home to the community, you know, where you have many females. Matter of fact, Ron A. Robinson was on, last week, I think it was, and he was just talking about his mother, you know, just not only just rearing her children, but the community, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what that's the bowels of the female and the spirit of the female, you know. It's like, mm-hmm. the whole thing is that we were created to change nations, you know. And mm-hmm. and so what people think is, well, are you global? You know, how many countries you've been to? No, what I am is I'm called to nations, you know, and nations came out of Eve, you know. She was the mother all living, you know. And then in addition to that, you know, she was a spiritual woman, the physical. And so nations have come out of us. And so no one can stop us. You know, no one can put us in the box. You know, a lot of times they'll say, well, you know, Miss Brown, what is your niche, you know, or what is your demographic? Well, to be honest, I see nations, you know. I think right. of Asia. I think of Australia. I think of Antarctica. I think of, you know, Europe. I think of, you know what I mean, you know. Antarctica, you know, so I'm thinking global, and I believe that my sisters are doing the same thing. So they're not just looking at just their family, you know. My mom, with us growing up in East New York, you know, my brothers, they would bring their friends home for dinner, and we barely had dinner for ourselves, but my mother made sure she stretched it, you know what I mean? You know, mm-hmm. and so it's important, as you were saying earlier, Dr. Ron, that sisterhood, that we begin to stretch our food, you know, for others, stretch our finance so that we could help the person next door, you know, the community, you know what I mean? You know, and that we are stretching our food and our provision for the entire world so that, you know, I go up, then I need to bring my sisters with me, you know. And Sharon Nielsen Mullings talked about this last week, that if the life skin sister is being promoted, then she needs to look down and look back and say, okay, what dark skin sister can I bring up, you know? And because right, if we right. don't bring each other up, and I think of Hidden Figures, you know, if we don't bring each other up for those promotions and that we'll be in supervisory positions, then we all stand the chance of falling all the way back down, you know, because.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's very powerful because you're definitely welcome. It's very powerful because with Hidden Figures, you know, Mary Jackson, Katherine Johnson, Dorothy, you know, Vaughn, you know, they begin to really pull each other up and pull them into the arena and says, hey, you know what? I know someone, you know, let's just say hypothetically working in HR. I know someone who's, you know, entry level clerical position, but they show initiative. And so it's important as we grow that we take other people with us. Very important. You know, very important.
You
Thank
know,
you
I,
for
I
your
was,
input,
I thinking,
Dr. Wimbledon, too.
Yes, yes. I was thinking about they had a study, and I thought this was over with, but I was surprised that it still exists today. They was having a study mm-hmm. about racism in the military, and one young brother, his grandfather was a Tuskegee mm-hmm. Airman, and as a little boy, 8-9 years old, he was influenced by his grandfather to become an airman, become a air fighter in the Air Force,
right.
and he became in a very what they call it? There's very unique and a very elite class of air flyers that he joined
right.
into a couple of years ago, and he said that one of the things that he was told is that he was tall. He was brown skinned, not dark, but brown skinned, and he had a heavy voice. And he said so one of the things mm-hmm. the trainers would tell him. And his superiors would tell him is to back it down, you know, don't talk so aggressive with your voice and keep your body down. He said, well, how in the hell do I keep my voice down and
right.
keep my body down? You know what I'm saying? So he got so frustrated to the point that he quit and went to Harvard, a law school, and became an attorney. And then he just went on and on and on. Hmm. All these interviews, the military, the Air Force, the Marines, the National Guard, they just kept interviewing all these black men and women. But the black men were saying, they kept telling them, you're too tall, you're too strong, tone
right.
it down, slim it down, you know, keep your voice down, speak like this, speak like that. And so a lot of brothers were saying, you know, one brother said that the supervisor told him, he said, let me tell you something, you ain't getting nothing out of me. This he said, as long as you're in my class and you're under me, you're under my supervision, don't expect to get nothing. You ain't getting an A, you ain't getting pass, I'm not doing nothing for you. He said, the best thing you can do is stay the damn way from me. And so the guy said, the interviewer said, well, what did you do? He said, well, I stayed away from him the whole four years. But it was frustrating for him because when you're in a class and somebody's training or somebody's supervised, you need that connection, you need that resource. You
right,
say, okay, you didn't do this right, but you did this wrong. So, and it was just one story to the next story just showed me that, you know, how women have found the way. And I know that, I mean, me and you were talking about this, Coach Morrell.
Yes.
Between the 60s, 70s, and the 80s, women became very progressive economically because they became more employable at that time.
Right, yes.
Men seem to have a difficult time getting employment, black men in particular, and you would find that a lot of women were working and the men were home looking for work but still home and took a domestic type of position, taking care of kids, whatever.
Right.
And I understand that is how you unbalance the family unit because now the woman's carrying all the responsibility in her mentality. The man is feeling bad because he feels he's not pulling his part. So now with these ill feelings and being in a society that structured it that way, but the ill feelings are on you and the wife. So now the arguments start. You know what I'm saying? And the man, men have a pride of, you know, one thing about a man that maybe, you know, a lot of people don't know or people might know. Man has the need to be the provider.
Exactly.
Now, whether that's a conflict when they used to talk about when I was growing up, they were saying, well, the men is conflicted because a woman make more money than he makes. And then that was a conflict.
That.
You know? If one made $5,000 a year more than he, then they were talking about that. And, you know, all these discussions became a discussion. But I knew that it became the psychology of saying to the black man, well, you know what? She's making more. But who cares? You know, half the time she has a master's or a bachelor's, and half the time the man have a high school diploma working in a job, maybe in construction, maybe in a union or something like that. You know what I'm saying? So it's applicable that she would make more money than him. But the fact that it became an issue with they put it out there, and it became an issue with relationships. It became a pressure between a husband and a wife. And I saw many husbands who've been married for years have a struggle with the economic situation because it was thrown in their face and not understanding.
Right.
The Bible said, make no way for the devil. Not understanding that whole concept causes a fraction in your relationship. People got involved in that. So there's a bunch of things that, and sisters, you know, sisters tend to try to deal with it, you know, in terms of if they make more money than a man, they try to, you know, maybe say they don't make that much, you know, or they'll try to play it down. You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
they try to do what they can do to try to keep the relationship together. But the damage is done because most of us see ourselves from the mirror of society. You know, it's very difficult.
Absolutely.
Very few people, you know, that see themselves from God's perspective. You know, what do God see, you know, in you, and which has there's no monetary value when God sees us. It's not like, because I'm rich and you're poor, I'm better than you. No, but you might be poor, but you might be poor, you might be doing more service than I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the woman that gave the penny, and the man, wealthy man, gave all those dollars, all that money, and the servant said to the master said to the servant, he said, you know, she gave more out of nothing.
Mm.
He said, but no.
Mm-hmm.
So he thinking mathematically. He said, no. He gave all the money. He gave the most money. He said, no, but he gave out of plenty. So he gave a little bit he gave a little bit out of all that he had, all that he could have done.
Yeah.
He only gave a little bit from it. She gave all that she had from nothing. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
So, it's how you look at it. And that was my point. It's how the woman looks at the man who might not be making as much as she's making, but how do he contribute to the children, the household, loving, compassion, you know, whatever it is, you know, the money is not important. But like I said to you before, if you watch the 70s and the 80s, women start saying, women of means, women of power, women of position, I don't really need a man. You know, all he can do for me is make me a baby and he's going about his business and I'll take care of, you know.
Right.
And that became a concept as well.
The women's
ERA,
women.
Yeah, the ERA, the women's movement, from the white woman's perspective, was, you know, sister, you know, old girl, let's get together. And that's why I say a lot of times that structure was not, even though black women financed the women's movement,
Right.
It did not work for them. Madame Malone, who was a mentor for Madame C.J. Walker, Madame Malone was, I think she was first generation free. Okay.
Okay.
But she was able to make millions of dollars in the healthcare and beauty industry. And then as a little girl, Madame C.J. Walker observed her and went into the same field.
Yes.
But Madame Malone started financing way back in the beginning the female movement, okay, the equal rights movement for women. But when they found out, when it came down to the voting rights and certain governmental policies would not change for the black woman because the black family itself, the black man, the black child, the black woman was already discriminated against, and they wasn't changing that for the black woman. They wasn't going to say, okay, here's a set of rules for your husband, your black man, and here's a set of rules for your black children, and here's a set of rules for you. No, no, no. The rules collaborate together. But I understand they didn't understand Madam C.J. Walker and Madam Malone, how the system had operated. They thought, okay, maybe we get in here and change some of this, and maybe it'll affect other things as well, which was not the case.
Uh-huh.
The white woman got the right to vote first. The white woman got the right to drive a car, read a book, and smoke cigarettes. Yes. And the black woman still was standing, waiting for some level of justice for her man. So I always said, that just shows us that as a people, if we don't move forward together, regardless male, female, rich, poor, educated, uneducated, if we don't move together, because God said that the least of these is so important.
Right.
He said that if a farmer, the sheep herder, had 100 sheep, and one sheep got lost, and he didn't go find that one sheep, he's not worthy of being a sheep herder.
Wow.
Go figure, people. That means one brother or one sister get lost in drugs and alcoholism, homelessness, or whatever the devastation is of the day, and we don't go and we say 100 of them. 99 out of the 100, and we don't go back to try to find that sister, that brother, and bring them back, you know, we just lost the point. You know what I'm saying? So, but I see sisters, and this is women, you know, I don't want to get to the man thing, but this is women's history month, and I see the sisters that people that go back for another sister. You know, I just know women that worked. I worked in the counseling, youth, and a drug system so long that the sisters that worked as drug counselors, case managers, they got involved with their clients. You know, they see them in the street and they're like, yo, what's up with you? What you doing over here? You know, this is not a good neighborhood, you know? And I'm like, mind your business,
let them
do, you know? And she's like, no, this is, you know, I've been working with you a long time. We had sessions for many, many years. You know, so when you graduate from most of these programs, they give you X amount of little tokens or something, you know, 12-step program, 7, whatever it is, and you get these little doodads, you know, little bracelets or whatever. And the sister's like, you know, you be driving down with sisters going to lunch, and they're like, wow, that's John. John was I was counseling him, you know, 5 years ago. And I'm like, well, that's 5 years ago. He's no longer counseling. No, I got to find out what's going on, you know. And she would go down and talk to the brother or the sister. And, you know, she was concerned about their health and their environment that they were in and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Brothers be like, you know what? I don't counsel you. You ain't did it. That's all right. And a lot of times they don't want you to see them. You know, I'm not. They cover their face. Don't look at me. You know.
Right.
Exactly. So women. You know, Women History Month is a great thing because women do deserve to be recognized. You know, for all that they've done.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah.
That's definitely.
Wow. That, I mean, well said. I mean, really well said. You know, I believe that, and this is what we talked about just briefly last week, is that rather it's an interracial couple, you know what I mean, or, you know, two Nubians, that it's about unity because when you look back, you know, after slavery or during slavery, you know, you had the Willie Lynch, you know, his letters to the slave master, to accentuate differences, you know, and that would even be in if the wife is making more money, you know, and her husband is making less money, and do you allow that to break up the family? You know, what's more important is that husbands and wives, you know, or for those that choose to do common law, you know, if you're staying together for the sake of the development of that child so that you can have healthy families. And that's really what it's about. And I do believe, and I'm glad you brought this out, Dr. Ron, that it got to a place really where, and we studied this some years ago when I worked at Newark Preschool Council, where I was in the social work department, and one of our major trainings we had was domestic violence, you know, training, and prevent child abuse and neglect, because what had happened was the female, in a sense, was, for whatever reason, you know, no longer with her husband, no longer with the boyfriend, but then the other uncles would be coming in, and that, for some families, it left the children prey, you know, to men that this woman didn't even know, you know, just to perhaps, you know, sex for that night or that week or whatever. And so the kids fell prey to the divide and conquer, you know, or if the man just up and left, the husband left, you know, then this strange man comes in and don't have any real wanting to have any real vibrant, healthy relationship with the children, you know. And so it has really left our families in havoc, you know. And I just believe the reason why this particular show is so important, you know, and to me it's nothing to show. It's more to demonstrate where, you know, Morel Brown Incorporated, you know, Neo Nation, Dr. Ron, you know, Dr. Winborn, and all the guests that comes on, is to say, where are we as a people, and how can we look at where we are and then map out a desirable road for where we want to go, you know, and that's holistically, you know, when it comes down to nature, systems, our friends, family, self, and God. How can we do better as a people, you know? Yes, you know, historically, you know, we see the divide and conquer, but now what are we going to do about it? You know what I mean? We see that they still want to take the voting rights, you know, as far as Georgia's concerned. And if we allow it to happen, then what other city, you know, is next, you know? Or you want to make perhaps, what do you call this thing, the vaccine, you know, mandatory. Well, then what else you want to do, you know? And I just believe that we want to come together, male and female, you know, and black and white, you know what I mean, you know, Asian, you know, so that we can say, you know what, everybody deserves life, you know, liberty, and to pursue happiness and well-being, you know, so it's very important, these segments, very important. So please, those that are listening, you know, please glean, take notes. You know, Dr. Ron is, as you can say, a historian. I'm so blessed to have you, that. You know.
I know it happened a long time ago.
And Dr. Winborn, I'm telling you, we got two doctors on, you know, bring a wealth of information. Look, look, look. And I'm the young one, you know, so. All that history, I don't know all that history. Oh, God. Yes,
I said, yes. I don't know if I'm a historian, but I just remember things in the old days.
You hear what I know, but, I know. So look, you help to bridge. You help to bridge what I don't know. You and Dr. Winborn, I appreciate.
Oh, well, listen, I'm gonna tell you like from Dr. Robinson.
Tell
you like I'm gonna tell you like Aretha Franklin. Aretha Franklin
right.
told Ed Sullivan
oh,
when he asked her. He said, "You've been around a long time singing." And you know a lot. You know, you had a
uh-huh.
lot of experience. You had a lot going on
right.
in your life. You know, there's some things
uh-huh.
that went on that I guess he wanted her to talk about, and she didn't plan to talk about it. So he kept on. You
right.
went through a lot in your life. You had all these things going on, and such a young little girl singing, and, you know, you had all these things.
Right.
She said, well, let me put it to you this way. She said, I am experienced. And she looked like that. She said,
right,
I am
right.
experienced. No, I'll leave it that way.
You're
like,
gonna
I am
leave
experienced.
It like that, doctor.
Dig it. I'm going to leave it like
you're
that.
You're going to leave
but
it like that.
You know,
I'll leave that. I'll leave.
There you go.
That's
there you
cool,
go. But,
cool.
you know, we're on the other flip side of the hour. We're going into
I see that.
Commercial
I saw
time.
That. Yeah.
I think we should get Dr. Winborn some time to talk about the reparations program, which is going so well. You know, South Carolina's
yes.
beating New York, you know. We got a contest, Coach Morel. South Carolina against New York, California, Mississippi, Alabama.
Oh, really?
You know, we got to fight everybody. You know how it is. We got.
I got to fight all my life.
Yeah, we just keep on fighting, you know. So, Dr. Wimborn, tell us what's going on in reparations and how things are happening there and how people can get involved.
Well, I would say that there's a contest going on, but I only see one person hitting jump shots. So, we're not going to talk about who that is, but we're excited because we see people that are signing up. We had some more people sign up yesterday. And so we are really, really grateful for the activity that we see with the reparations program. We have people that are going on and buying the reparation packages to be a part of this national movement that is growing. And as you know, we are still in our beginning stages. We've just turned on the machine. And we're just getting it to run and seeing what it'll do and what it won't do. But we are thoroughly encouraged by what we see happening already. And so we want to, it's state of the art. We have the state of the art system. You know, I see the computer sending out checks. You know, without us having had to tell it. It automatically does all the deductions. It's something to marvel at. And the more we get to know it, the more we understand the mechanics of it, the more excited I get about it. So I said all of that to say this. We want you to be a part of the National Reparation Program of Self-Reparations. You know what we do. We have reparation missions. We're going to pay you to go out and do reparation missions to help repair our nation. In addition to that, you can become a distributor and sell our products. You can become an activist and build you a team of activists and override those activists. You can build you a business within the business. So there are three main streams of income included in this project, and you want to be a part. And not only is it helping you, but it's helping your families, our communities, and black people as a whole. So you want to sign up. Not only you want to sign up, you want to sign your mother, your father, your sister, your uncle, your cousin, your grandmother, the pastor, the whole alto section. You want everybody to come and be a part and sign up and take the reparation packages, contribute into the National Treasury as the National Negro Treasury, I might say, as we embark on this project of circulating funds and reparations amongst ourselves. We want you to be a part. Go by the website. It's www.myprojectneil.org. www.myprojectneil.org. Check it out.
Talk about the packages and the T-shirts and stuff.
Well, each package comes with two different things. Each package comes with several items and income opportunities. So depending on where you sign up will determine what's in your reparation package. So the packages have various things, T-shirts, hats, IDs, lapel pins, books, plates. Depending on where you at, we are stock in the company, build a downline for it. It all depends on where you are. And that's the beauty of the system, the way it's set up now, because we've come to realize that everybody is not on the same level. The way we initially set it up, everyone started at the $8 level and then worked your way through the system as the system pushes you through. But now we're saying, listen, there's some people that don't want to start at the $8. They want to start at the $20. Some want to start at the $40. Some want to start at $80. Some want to start at $160. Some want to start at $320. As you notice, the numbers go up each time. So, and it is very possible that you can progress and get paid higher commissions as the system is pushing you up and you really haven't done anything because you are being rewarded based on the accomplishments of the whole movement. And so we want you to be a part. We have a way to change people's lives. We have a way to change the lives of every black person that you know. It is here. We are no longer just hearer of the word. We are now doers of the word. We have a way, a solid plan that we see working where we can self-reparate. and change our lives together. So again, go by, check it out, or give us a call at 888-UNN-CASH. That's one. That's 888-UNN-CASH. Or go by the website. And we'll answer all the questions. We're going to be coming on. We're going to be doing a show on Saturdays at 12 o'clock, high noon, called Reparations Radio. And we're going to be going live, and we're going to be talking about who got paid this week, who signed up this week. So if you're listening now under the sound of my voice, go to the website and sign up. And Coach Brown, have you signed up yet?
No, I haven't.
All right. So
I plan to, sir.
Okay. So when y'all go to the website, Coach Brown hasn't signed up yet. So when y'all go there, y'all got to sign up under Dr. Robinson because he's already there.
Oh, it's just like that, huh?
Yeah, right.
It's all good. It's all good. Y'all hold the
$1,200 and sign up under Coach Morrell.
Thanks, bro. Hidden figures over here.
Right. All right. So we want you to do go and look at it. Look at what we're doing. And, you know, we have the reparations mission. When you go to the website, you can look at the reparation package. But I encourage you to also look at the reparation missions because in there you can follow the money. We've got it set up so that you can follow the system and you can see how money is accumulated and circulated and see how that we're not lying to you about what little bit can do. You can sign up. It's not every month. It's a one-time sign-up fee. This one time. That's it. You don't have to pay every month. Like some things do, none of that. You sign up one time, and you're in the house. You sign up one time and just ride the wave.
Amen. Well, our special guest for the other side of the hour is here, Mrs. Sharon Mullings-Nielsen, director of the Woodland Academy in that great, great city of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Topics of woman's worth, empowering women to love themselves. And we're going to have her on in a minute. And we got our special guest from last week, our honored listeners, Mr. Means and Mrs. Means, both who are dating outside of the race. You know, they're dating people of the European background, Caucasian, white, whatever you want to call it. And they got some special questions for I call her Coach Sharon. So we're going to give her a nice welcome and bring her on in as well. Let's give her a nice hand here.
Good night, everybody. Thank you so much for having me. I am just, again, honored to be a guest on this show, and I'm just grateful that I can come back and share again from my heart. So thank you for having me.
You're definitely welcome, Sharon.
Hello, Coach Sharon. How are you?
I'm very blessed. Thank you. I'm doing well.
Thank. Wonderful, wonderful. So, Coach Morrell.
Yes, I'm here. Okay, all righty. I'll take it along. You know, Sharon, I'm telling you, it's just been a very energized show tonight. And, Dr. Ron, I mean, he just gave a lot of history in terms of, you know, the women's movement, you know, to the various singers, Nina Simone, you know, Marian Anderson, and so on and so forth. I talked a little bit about in terms of passion and that, you know, when everyone's just born, you know, with a purpose and you have that drive and that passion to be what you need to be. And I talked about, you know, Lauryn Hill, you know, playing in Sister Act 2, you know, when she was telling her mom, I need to sing, you know, and that, you know, to become self-actualized is realizing that you have a sense of purpose and following that purpose. And then we talked about, you know, the division that came within the African-American family where, the men was the sole provider at one point in history. And then through the 70s, because of the 50s and the 60s, the women's movement, and a lot of light went on females now working from the home into, you know, mainstream. And we talked about hidden figures and, you know, Mae Carroll Jameson, the engineer, you know, Hillary Clinton, Condoleezza Rice. And then that how those positions and professions has changed, but yet the female has gotten some, not all, a little hoardy, and so the men became insecure, and either they left, you know, their females, you know, their wives, you know, their girlfriends, or the woman just decided, I don't need a man, and then how that sometimes caused children to become prey, you know, to uncles coming into the house, you know, and a man that really doesn't really have the child's well-being, you know, at heart. And and now how can we rebuild? And so, but what we want to do is your passion in terms of a woman seeing their self-worth, you know? And so I'm going to hand it over back to you.
Yeah, so I think that's definitely critical. And I just have to, again, like I said last week when I was on, just really be careful about generalization. So while we do know that we have some brothers who have issues and we have some sisters who have issues, we also want to recognize those women and those men who are just doing a wonderful job, who are holding it down, who are true to themselves, who are committed to the community, so that we don't become like the news that every time we see a black face, it's bad news or it's tragic news, you know. That's not the whole story. Total sum of who we are. So I do want to put that out there. For me, on this last day of Women's History Month, which is just not long enough, just like Black History Month is
not long enough.
yeah, definitely. I just want to hopefully share with everybody just how important it is to understand that loving yourself and loving God and finding out who you are and, like I said, your purpose by recognizing that relationship first and then using that relationship to also find out how to love ourselves and better love ourselves as women and for the men who are listening also is, to me, two very important aspects of growth and self-development. And so if you don't target or don't make this a priority, like make your relationship with God a priority and your relationship as far as you loving yourself a priority, then what happens is that you find that the decisions that you make and the people that you let into your circle and the people that you allow in your life may be poisonous to you because your mind and your body and your soul is not aligned with truth and it's not aligned in love. And so you tend to make decisions that are not in your best interest. And then how that impacts your family, as far as if you're single raising children, the impact of the broken relationships that you are in and out of, the revolving door situation. Your children are looking and they are learning from you.
Right.
Unfortunately, some unhealthy communication skills or unhealthy relationships or negative relationships through your struggle to love yourself. So it really is critical for you to do that. And like I said, one of the things that you need to do is to put yourself on your own agenda when it comes to the other things that we put in priority. You know, as women, we like to always take care of other people first. When somebody needs help, we drop everything and we, you know, tend to them. When we put our children first, if we're in a relationship, we sometimes put that other person first. And so we have to really begin to look at ourselves as a priority and schedule a meeting with ourselves. You know, just like you would schedule an appointment to meet with a client or to meet with a patient, put yourself at the 2 o'clock slot. From 2 to 3, I'm going to meet with myself. And get in touch with your goals and get in touch with your vision, your dreams, and really start to push for those things that you want to do and accomplish for yourself. And use that as also opportunity to to really nurture your children and let them see you doing that, because then they learn too that they mm-hmm. are important also, so they can schedule themselves wow. as they grow older and learn about self-love and what that's about. But I think that that's definitely one of the first steps that we need to do as women, is to shift our priority in a way that we are elevating ourselves and that we are paying attention to ourselves and our emotions and how we feel, and learning to deal with our frustrations in a way that's healthy, to right. really be realistic about the love in our lives, and being honest about what that relationship is about and not just settling for somebody because you need to be in a relationship, but really looking at mm-hmm. what's the benefit in this relationship. And I'm not talking about monetary benefits. I'm talking about emotional support. I'm talking about a sense of peace. I'm talking about somebody who empowers you, somebody who you can lean on and you can share and you can talk and you can be yourself, that you can be you're transparent with. So all of these things are things that we need to be looking for when we are in a relationship with somebody. And if it's not that, if it's a relationship that's unhealthy, then we need to, you know, figure out how we can remove ourselves from that relationship and then heal and move on. I know that was a lot.
Wow. So that was great. You know, Sharon, you know, just really well said. It's interesting when you talked about that alignment, you know, and being, even if you're broken, right? Even if a female mm-hmm. is broken. I remember, you know, and you remember this, you know, as we were younger, just came up broken, you know, looking for myself. Mm-hmm. Who am I? You know, what is my purpose? What is my sense of, you know, self? And learning to now taking those broken pieces, or where female has been damaged or feeling like damaged goods, to say, mm-hmm. you know what, how can I get around healthy people so that I can see what healthiness looks like, you know, surrounding myself so that, you know, with even books, you know, I'm reading mm-hmm. Michelle Obama's book, you know, former first lady's, you know, book, Becoming, mm-hmm. you know, and looking at her writing style, looking at things that she had to overcome, you know, mm-hmm. and to where she, you know, just her road, you know, and the challenges mm-hmm. that life is not easy, so that mm-hmm. a female especially can become self-actualized, have a great sense of self, you know, by reading and certain types of television programs, certain movies, so that you understand who you are, that it's not easy. So you said a lot, the relationship with self first, and then looking on the outside to have that relationship with someone else. And I believe that it's very important, very alignment. I call it, you know, and most people do, spirit, the soul, you know, the body connection, sitting down, you know, saying, what is it do I want? Who am I? You know, what I want to get out of a relationship, you know, with a man, with a boyfriend, with the husband, you know, and making sure that you're safe, you know, first. I think that's so important. Sharon, I want you to, because you're, I'm thinking expert, but you have a lot of experience. And in terms of relationship, you know, you've been married how many years?
I have been married for 32 years.
32. Did y'all hear that, audience? My God, 32
wow.
years.
Wow.
You know,
2 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, And the thing that, yes, so, you know, so commendable. And the thing about it is that you're saying to our sisters is if they can become whole first and then look for that mate or receive that mate. And I will just say this to you, Sharon, just, you know, reading a little bit of your mail, was it easy? You know, was it like, let's just get married, have this fairy tale wedding, and then you live happily ever after, you know?
Most definitely not. So,
I know that.
And I do want to also say that when Paul says no matter what state you find yourself in, to be content. There's definitely yes. some truth to what he's saying. So if yes. you're single, so when I started dating, I really wasn't looking to get married. I wasn't really looking to date anybody. I really was very happy with my life the way it was. I had a good family. We had fun, had friends. We loved to go out. We loved to, do what, young people do. So enjoy the moment that you are, if you're single, enjoy that time in your life. Use it yeah. as an opportunity to better, advance your career or to work on a goal right. or to collaborate on a project and do that kind of stuff. I know that, everybody searches for love and everybody has that need to be loved and to be in a relationship. But just giving, the statistics on men mm-hmm. and women, we just know that there's more women out there than there are men who are available. So just right. know that not everybody is going to end up being married. And so really understanding that sure. And not everybody, everybody at the current time in which they're dating or the current time they may be looking for somebody is really ready to be in a relationship with somebody. Mm-hmm. you might have some baggage and some things that you need to work out, or they might have some baggages and stuff that they need to work out. But in order for a marriage is very difficult because it is really two people who have been raised in two different family structures who come together and then have to build something and create something differently, as well as themselves grow up and themselves right. and know and understand themselves and navigate through life. And so it's very much a give and take. But one of the things that you need to do is to find out from who you are, what your strengths are, and what you're looking for in a relationship, and being very clear and transparent with that, and understand that if you're dating somebody and you're having issues
right.
with one aspect or another aspect of it, then understand mm-hmm. that, when you're dating someone, they usually are on their best behavior. And so once that relationship progresses and guards get down, then those things that are like mm-hmm. a little bit like you're taken aback might become an irritant to you. So at the time in which it's taking you aback, really, really reevaluating the relationship and saying, is this something that I am willing to accept and willing to work on or work through with this person? Because nobody mm-hmm. is perfect. And so if nobody's perfect, then what are the imperfections that you bring or they bring that are really troubling mm-hmm. to you? So when you have, like, if you ever had a girlfriend and you talk about your relationships that you have with somebody that you're dating, and they're talking about the relationship that they have with somebody else that they're dating, you notice that they might be talking about this one issue, and you say to yourself, well, I know if I was in that relationship with that person, I could never deal with that. You have the strength to deal with that, and vice versa. So understanding that everybody is going to have a story where they can say that this is irritating for me in this relationship, or this really bothers me in this relationship, but you have to understand, is it worth mm-hmm. it, right?
Wow.
Is it valuable? Is it something that you can not sweat over, or it's not going to keep you up at night? But if it is, then you need to be honest about it and say, this is mm-hmm. not going to work for me. And don't let it be like really superficial stuff, stuff that's not really, like, he may be between jobs. Is he reliable? Is he honest? Is mm-hmm. he caring? Is he working on his resume? Is he trying to reinvent himself so he can find another job? That's what you need to look at, because you could be dating someone who has a job, but they're mean to you.
Mm-hmm.
They're selfish. They are angry. They're controlling. So really paying attention to those things that are core issues to who a person is. So, like I said, don't idealize marriage. Look at it for what it is. It's work. It's compromise. It's tug and wars. It's negotiation. It's peace treaties. It's all that love, war, and peace. It's all of that. But on the flip side of it, it's amazing. It's rewarding. Yes. It's empowering. It's all those other things too. But you just have to balance that out so that you don't get into marriage thinking that it's just going to be all roses.
Wow.
But you know, roses have thorns in them. So.
Oh my God, that's so powerful. My God, poetical talk, you know what I mean? Yeah, it has roses, but roses can have thorns. And this segment is so empowering, you know, relationship with self, relationship, you know, with your husband, your wife, you know, empowerment for, you know, Women History Month, you know. Reparation is just, oh my God, I'm enjoying this, you know.
Yeah.
I just believe that the audience, you're bringing so much value, Sharon, in terms of just being transparent, you know, and really, you know,
Another thing that women do is we're so easy to give our bodies to, to the person that we're dating without even giving ourselves the opportunity to know who they are.
Wow.
And I really want to caution us and men also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole idea of sexual relationships, a lot of people, when they look at, you know, like what it means to be a Christian, what it means to be true, and what it means to be celibate until you get married. And we think that God is just wanting to suck the fun out of us and you know, he just wants to prevent us from, you know, enjoying sex. And that's not really the point. And I think what we have to understand is that there's a reason why God is giving us the advice for us to wait until we're married before we have relationships with that person. And that's because the whole notion of sex, it's a union between two people. It's a bond, and that bond is extremely deep, and that bond is extremely important, and that bond is extremely sacred. And what ends up happening is when we enter into that deep of relationship with somebody, before we've gotten a chance, like I said, to really know them,
right?
It becomes even harder when we see those warning signs that, you know, once you're out of that bed, that say something is wrong with this relationship, or this relationship is not what I thought it was, or this person is not what I think it was. We've already made that commitment that it's now hard for us to pull back on. Or we end up having a baby and raising a child without their father because the relationship was not what it should have been. And so you have a child that's being raised as a single parent. And this has happened a lot. And it's happened a lot because, now listen, children are a gift from God. So there's no shame in the fact that you've gotten pregnant and you're having a baby, because children are a blessing. Right? Children are like God's gift. So that's what I want you to understand, that they are God's gift. But I'm sure that if you ask yourself, like, would you wish that the relationship would have been better, so that you guys could have raised this child together as one, then it would have been a yes. So before we jump into a relationship that's sexual with somebody, it's okay to wait.
Right.
It's okay to say, I'm waiting for my husband, I'm waiting for my wife before I enter into that relationship. It's okay for you to say that. It's not old fashioned. It really is a lot of common sense, and it makes a lot of sense biblically but it makes a lot of sense biblically because it helps other society avoid some of the brokenness within our families that we are experiencing. That's the wisdom that God is trying to say. Listen, I'm trying to help you from dealing in a situation that's going to break you by having to raise children and not have the support of the father there.
Right, right. Wow, wow. My God, a lot of wisdom, you know, Sharon. It's just, it gets deep, you know. And I'll just be transparent, you know. I wasted time in the past, you know what I mean, you know, and because you want to feel good, you know,
right.
And then, you know, because like you say, it's a union, the men lose too, you know. They go around, yeah, you know. But the reality, because they're spirit beings, you know, they're plugging in here and there, you know, and but they lose, you know, just that sense of purposelessness, like, you know what I mean? And that attachment, you went into this female and you, there was no real production. There was no purpose for it, you know, and I'm not saying just about men, but even the female, and you feel, you know, like, wow, damaged goods. And
right.
But
or we use it as a numbing process, of a numbing. It's like a drug.
Exactly.
It becomes a drug.
Exactly. Right.
And it becomes addictive. And we have to really be really mindful of our addictions and our things that really can compromise us as women, and also compromise our body.
Right. And to compromise our body, you know. Because it's interesting, because I have this writing, a friend of mine has shared it with me. She talked about the covenant, you know, that sexual covenant, that the minute that the man goes into the female, they're actually married, you know, and especially in the court of law, that's what they, more so even than the paper, is did you consummate the marriage? you know what I mean? You know, it seals it, you know, and the breaking of the hymen and so on and so forth. And, you know, like I said, we're understanding, you know, we're giving you information, tips and tools that you can glean from, and that you can put this in your repertoire that, you know, as I said earlier, you know, putting up the hand like the crossing guard, saying, you know what, two things, you know, you get overheated, you know, and you want to need to take a cold shower and things like that. That's the time to say, God, I need strength, you know, and that I'm not going to call him tonight. You know what I mean? You know, and vice versa. I'm not going to call her tonight, because where's that relationship getting you, you know? Because after it's over, in reality, you know, you feel good for the moment, but then you realize, guess what? If he's still at his house, you know, and he's not making any commitments, and as, what does Beyonce say? You're not putting a ring on it. You know, both of you are still left alone and still broken, and he's still looking for love. You're still looking for love.
Right.
And so I've been there. I know what that's like, you know, but thank God, you know, we're talking to my sisters. We're talking to my brothers tonight, but especially sisters, to say, you know what, if you can glean from, you know, my experience and my hurt, you know, my past brokenness, please, you don't experience don't have to be the best teacher. You know, I don't need to keep COVID to believe that it's real. No, I can look at other people's life and I can say, you know what, no, I don't really need to learn this lesson. Somebody learned that lesson for me. And so, you know, tonight we've learned this lesson for you. You know, Sharon saying to you, hey, you know what, you want to be married, that's fine, but get to know the individual, you know, and then get married for the right reason, and go into it saying, you know, for better or worse, richer or poor, you know. And of course, there's some caveats, you know, sexual abuse, you know, or physical abuse, emotional abuse, these type of reasons, but, it, you know, go in there not looking for that back door, you know, and saying, we want to have a whole family, you know. And so when I think of the unending love of a father, that book, it was penned because of my own brokenness from growing out without a father, you know, not really knowing my father, you know. And so now it's just years of dealing with that spirit of abandonment, and that's what it's about. so that, you know, and with Sharon, you know, working in the childcare industry, you see a lot, you know, you get to see the brokenness in families. You want to just talk about that a little bit more?
Yes, and I do also want to say this too. Like I said it the first time, like this is a no judgment zone, okay?
Right, so exactly.
I am not judging, and I'm not here to judge, because who am I to judge anybody? Mm-hmm. So
right.
If you do feel like you're being judged, please know that that's not the intent. That's not why I'm having this conversation. It's not to call anybody out. It's not to make anybody feel small, feel unworthy.
Right.
Or, you know, any way, shape, or form. It's just really to help have a conversation that's transparent and to give advice or to just share from my heart. So I do want to also say, make that.
Thank you, Sharon. And the same here, you know, no judgment zone. You know, I wouldn't talk about, you know, my past if I was going to judge anybody else, you know, if I point couple of fingers, you know, at someone else, guess what? You know, if I'm pointing one at a finger, you know, three is going to be pointing back at me. So
yeah,
we're here, you know, again, just to help you to maximize, you know, use your, as I say, tag, your talents, your abilities, and your gifting, and then overcoming boundaries that'll keep you from truly loving yourself and becoming self-actualized.
Yes. And I definitely know, because I've been raised by a single mother who raised six of us and her stepchildren. Also, and I know that we can do it. We definitely can do it. And sometimes we have to do it. So I understand that, and I appreciate you women who are doing it and doing a fantastic job of doing it.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
So kudos to you. So I've seen that there's been a lot of hurt in families. You know, like children are hurt because of the, you know, unintended breaking up of relationships, and how we handle that. You know, it's difficult to co-parent sometimes with a father who is just not, you know, where we need him to be or where we think he should be. And so our kids suffer because, and I want you to understand something too, like children don't, don't, as a parent, when you're raising your kids and they're young, don't talk about their father negatively to them.
Right.
Because what you have to understand is that children know that they have a bit of both of you in them. And so when they hear you criticizing their dad, they're taking that as a criticism about them too. They know that their dad is a part of them. And so when you're saying he's that and he's this, or I wish he would do this, I wish he would do that, it's as if they hear them saying that those things to them, like, I wish you were, instead of I wish he were. So just, you know, hold those complaints to when they're sleeping, and then you can get on the phone with your girlfriend, or they're not here, and you just, you know, talk about as much as you want to talk about it, but don't talk about it, you know, to them. Be positive. And I'm not saying make excuses. I'm just saying, you know, keep the conversation positive. And then when you're having those difficult conversations with them, keep the emotions about it. Don't, you know, like, don't say, oh, you said you were going to pick him up and you never picked him up. Like, what's going on here? What you doing is so important. Just bring it back to that child. Your son, your daughter was looking forward to spending time with you. They waited for you to pick them up, or they waited for you to call and you didn't, and they were hurt. Bring it back to what that child is feeling, because that's the important thing. You're trying to raise and you're trying to do things in the best interest of this child, not in the best interest of you and not in the in the best interest of him. It really is about the best interest of the child. And what can we do together? How can we partner together to raise this child? So those are some of the strategies that you definitely can use when you're trying to strengthen the family, because it really helps, even if you're not living in the same household. It really helps when both parents are on the same page, because it also shows the children how to partner and how to collaborate and how to negotiate and how to respect and how to really work well with others. And so you really given them a good example. It's not just about you saying it, but it's about you walking the walk. You know,
right.
When you tell them how to handle conflicts that they have with their siblings, but you can't handle the conflict that you have with their father, that's telling them, it's telling them two different things. And trust me, they're going to look more at what you do than what you
right.
say.
Wow. Wow. That is so powerful. So powerful. Because it's hard to model positivity if you haven't seen it in relationships,
mm-hmm.
you
mm-hmm.
know, or when you can have a healthy relationship, you know, and both parties are not bouncing, you know, around, you know,
mm-hmm.
you can see stability, you know, and otherwise that child, you know, would have to just unlearn the unhealthy relationships and be able to have a healthy relationship. I remember when
yeah.
we were writing the anthology, you know, Kingdom Business and Business, you know, with myself and a few other people, our issue with relationship is because, you know, having not grown up without a dad, you know, and although, you know, we saw men in a good role, like late Apostle Washington mm-hmm. and different men that was in our lives, but to actually have a father there and to understand what it looks like to have a healthy relationship, you know,
mm-hmm.
is very challenging. And that does
mm-hmm.
affect a child when they get older, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you go through relationships and, you know, and then you realize, you know, as I said a couple of months ago on Dr. Ron's show, you know, I was angry for a long time, didn't realize I was angry until my boyfriend
right.
said to me, "You're angry," you know,
mm-hmm.
and because I didn't display, in a sense, it was like with sister friends and cousins, I didn't have to be angry with them because they didn't make a
right.
promise and didn't keep it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
They didn't, you know, just would come around, you know, just to have a sexual relationship with my mom, you know, don't tell I say sex, but he was the male, you know, and he represented my dad. And
right.
he's this male, and I'm, you know, like, I guess lashing out at him, and I, you
mm-hmm.
know, and then to not realize it, and I was
mm-hmm.
like, oh, really, you know, and so to have fathers are so important, you know, dads, you are so important,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're not just pants, you know, you're
mm-hmm.
more than that, and please,
mm-hmm.
Sharon is saying, don't do to your child what your dad did to you, you know,
yeah.
and don't think and don't let nobody tell you your role is so insignificant, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that you're just going to hand mom the money,
mm-hmm.
you know, or the pets are going to
mm-hmm.
hand her the money. No, your child
mm-hmm.
needs you, you know, hear it from me, you know, we need you. I'm talking on behalf of children today, you know, there's like 24
oh,
million
yeah.
children currently
mm-hmm.
living, you know, thank you, Sharon. You know what, out there, biological parents. Your child needs
yeah.
you, you know.
Yeah.
They really
yeah.
do. They need you emotionally.
Yeah.
They need you psychologically. They need to be
mm-hmm.
able to they show up at the games.
Yeah.
You know, surprise them. Even if you maybe didn't do anything from 1 to 9 years old or 1 to 15 or 20, please, you know, don't wait till you're on your dying bed. You know, and I know, I think it was Jay-Z talked about that. You know,
mm-hmm.
John Gray, you know, different people, you know, dad shows them the worst part of him when he's transitioning. No, don't wait. Same
mm-hmm.
thing with mom. Please don't do that to a kid. If you can help it and pray to God, give you the strength, get in your kid's life, you know,
mm-hmm.
get in your,
mm-hmm.
you get no pass. You're not getting any
mm-hmm.
pass.
And if for some
yeah.
reason, you know, like you can't reach out to this child's father,
right.
you know, just let them know, like, your dad loves you. He's just not in a place where whatever, or
right.
this is a situation with your dad. But you know, like, you have to understand, like, kids have to explain the world. And if you don't give
mm-hmm.
them the context, then they
mm-hmm.
make up their own story. And usually
mm-hmm.
the stories that they make up are damaging
mm-hmm.
to themselves and
yeah.
are about themselves, like, my dad doesn't love me anymore, that's why, you know, he's not in my life, or he doesn't
right.
love me, that's why, X, Y, and let them be free from that self-doubt or that attacking of their self-esteem. Say, no, your dad loves you.
Yeah.
However, this is the situation, or however,
mm-hmm.
he can't, if he could, he would be with you. And it may be
right.
that he's just not capable of loving.
Mm.
that child right now because he's caught up in whatever he's caught up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So just tell your child your dad loves you, but right now he's struggling and he needs help.
Yeah.
Or, you know, wherever that situation that you can without giving the whole, you know, detail. But just letting them know, affirming that your dad loves you.
Wow.
I would like to open up some of the mics, some of our guests here that's on as well, and let them contribute maybe something that they would like to contribute as well. Open up the mic for Dr. Winborn and give them opportunity to contribute into the conversation.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm just listening just is trying to suck up all this wisdom from this Sophiac energy, trying to digest it all. Certainly, everyone is making a lot of very, very good points and a lot of stuff that we need to digest. And the one thing that I will say before I let the next speaker talk is that Coach Brown, I know your mother. And I'm going to tell her you said sex.
I know she hates when I tell that part in the book, you know. I'm in trouble.
Ooh,
I'm
you
in
get
trouble.
Home.
Oh, my goodness. I tell you.
Wow. Okay, we're going to open up 347-277.
You're welcome.
Professor, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, you on with Coach Sharon and Coach Morrell, and you're talking about good fathering and, you know, how to nurture your children. I'm sure you're hearing it. And you can contribute.
All right. First of all, let me just say, as I always say, let's get it together. But I was, some of you know, and I know Coach Brown knows, that as we speak, I am in transit from New York to Atlanta, Georgia. And so I'm on the bus, but I was listening. I had actually dozed off, and I said when I woke back up, I said, oh, it's you know, I can call in. I still got a little time. I want to just say that I can definitely relate to some of the things that have been said, because I came up in a household where my father was absent, although he was very, very much involved, you know, in my life. And of all the things that have been said, I think it was said that, you know, that the existing parent or the parent that's there should not speak negatively of the other parent. And I must say to my mother's credit, she's deceased now, but my dad is still living and he's 91 years old and he's in very good health. But my mother never spoke negatively of him. You know, she would not say negative things about it, even though I know that their relationship was very bitter. But she would not, you know, she didn't believe in, like, passing her feelings about him to us. As a matter of fact, she insisted that we respect him. So I have to give her credit for that piece. So I know we're just about out of time. Let me just say keep up the good work and just pray for my safe travels.
Well, thank you so much, Minister Greg. Thank you. And thanks for sharing and just being transparent. Without a doubt, you know, just blessings in your transition. You know, definitely, look, text us, let us know once you get in safely, you know. Enjoy your journey. Dr. Ron, do we have anybody else?
Oh, great. Oh, great, great, great. We don't have much time.
Right.
So I would just say that Coach Sharon, you know, just give us some words of wisdom in parenting. I got six kids. I've been parenting all my life. I got nine grands, great grands, great, great, great. They're so great. I can't even call their name, you know, but it's so important. This conversation is really important. I grew up in a situation in South Carolina where men did what men did and the women suck it up and nobody said anything. Mm-hmm. But like Greg said, you saw the pain. You know, as a male mm-hmm. growing up around mm-hmm. my mom and my father was a jazz singer. He traveled, you know, across the world singing and performing in different countries. And, you know, dad did what dad did. He was a heavy drinker, but, you know, he did what he did. A lot of club stuff, you know what I'm saying? My mother was a church-going person staying home. But I want to say to Sharon is that, you know, my mom was that type of woman, like Professor Gregory Hall said, you know, respect your father. Your father, you know, he's the best thing since sliced yeah. bread. But I absorbed her pain, you know what I'm saying, because I knew something wow. that I knew. Where I'm coming from, so... that's another thing, you know, about it, Coach Sharon.
Yeah, that's really hard because and that's where you have to keep that line of communication. You have to do those check-ins with your children and have those honest conversations because, you know, sometimes kids, you might not know, but they're very insightful and they see things and let them have that safe conversation about the things that they see because you mm. need to be able to give them the context so that they grow up with a real healthy understanding of relationships, the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know, it's okay if they see you cry. Like a lot of times, you know, we feel like women, we got to be strong. No, mm-hmm. no, it's okay for you to cry. And it's okay for your child to see mm-hmm. you cry because that's helping them to process their feelings. It's helping them to understand how to positively communicate when you're in pain and positively communicate when you're hurting. You don't need to give the details, but you can just say, I'm sad right now. And talk yeah. about the things that make you sad. Like, what makes you sad? And you say, I had a difficult day at work. How was your, you know, do you have a difficult day at school? And just talk about those things and have those conversations and let them know that they can ask you those questions. And you can say to them, well, I can't really explain that to you right now because I don't think that you're at an age where you can understand it. But when you get to that age, I'm going to have this conversation. And maybe write a letter to remind mm-hmm. yourself so they'll know. Like, when you get to 14, you read this letter and we can have this conversation about X, Y, and Z. But always mm. having that communication and having that line of communication open so they feel that they can talk to you and they can share with you and they can be transparent with you and vice versa. And then the other things, too, like, you know, we as women, we have to understand, like, we want to have good men in our relationship in our lives. We want to have good men to marry, and we want to have responsible men to marry. So we need to raise our children to be that. We need to raise our boys to be that because they're going to be somebody's husband one day. So we need to raise them with the compassion, and we need to raise them with self-help skills. Like, let them wash the dishes. Let them cook. Let them, you know, yeah, learn all those things that really will help them develop as a person. Because, like I said, you are molding them to be somebody's husband. And just the way you want to be treated as a wife, you need to give them those skills so they can be that husband that treats their wife with respect and treats them with compassion and treats them with transparency and honesty and say what they mean what they say. So just understand that that's also a gift that you can give to your future daughter-in-law by raising your man, your boy, to be a man.
Okay, that was
about all the time we have.
This is great. Sharon, I want to say thank you so much. You know, this is about life and leadership. You want to be a good mm-hmm. leader. You want to have a great life. You know, no one can really fix your life but you, you know. Mm-hmm. As we started out from the top, in order to love yourself and see your self-worth, you know, females especially, but men as well. You know, you got to look to God. That's where you get your image from. And I want to say thank you to Minister Greg who called in, you know, Dr. Winborn, Dr. Ron, Sharon, Mullings, Nielsen. Please give her a call. If you want free 15-minute consultation, you know, give me a ring at 862-205-9077. You've been listening to Life in Leadership with Morel, Coach Morel. God bless you and have a great night. Bye-bye.
Good night. Good night, everybody.
Hey. Find the praise
within your heart.
Within your heart.